Gaming Podcast, episode 375, recorded on January 24th, 2015.
Welcome to the 375th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 208th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and occasionally other stuff.
Yeah, well, there's not enough room for other stuff because we have to encompass the past 2 weeks. And the thing is that the news last week was really important that I couldn't not do it. And there was some important news this week.
Yeah, so. It's been a crazy 2 weeks for both of us. We had some scheduling conflicts.
Yeah. But, well, I didn't have a scheduling conflict. I had noisy crap next door.
Yes.
And I could not record. So, but, you know, I hear that you've been getting closer to getting hired for something. I know you probably can't tell what.
I've been spending a great deal of time trying to prep for a particular meeting. That was supposed to be one day and then got pushed back, you know, and necessitated another week of prep time because I'm just kind of type A like that. it's like if you gave me an extra 4 days to prepare, of course, that's what I'm going to do.
On the other hand, I'm planning for something new that won't exactly be related to this.
Okay.
Now, for those of you who know stuff like Red Letter Media and Channel Awesome, people like the Nostalgia Critic and Linkara and Top the Fourth Wall and all that stuff, I've decided I was going to start a review show myself. You know, you press the video and I review something on video and often do jokes and stuff like that. I thought I'd try my hand at that. It's something that I would have done a long time ago, 20 years ago, had I had the means to do it. I mean, technology is now that everybody can do a show. You know, everybody can post on YouTube.
Right.
So the thing is that, you know, I wanted to try my hand at it. So I have the editing tools right now. I have Pinnacle Studio. I have the Ultimate. Not the Premium, but the Ultimate. I shelled out the money because I had credit from on Amazon for money. So I was like, you know what? If I'm gonna get this at a discount, I'm just going to get the most advanced version, you know, the one with the most content and pay the normal amount that I would normally have paid if I had just paid it regular, right? So in this case, I'm getting it regular, but I'm getting with a lot bunch of bonuses.
Absolutely.
You know?
Always go for the upsell.
Yeah. Unless it's Windows, and then
unless
I just
it's
go
Windows.
For it.
What? By the way, speaking of Windows, I personally am not a fan of this whole you give us a subscription fee and we'll keep your thing updated every year. It's like, no, how about you just stop trying to make me give you money constantly? I will give you money for the product one time. And we will both move on with our lives.
Well, you're going to be pleasantly surprised about something that's been announced. It's in the news. No. I'm not going to. See, that's one thing. I do not like to give spoilers while you eat.
so I don't spit up all over my computer. I appreciate that.
What have you been playing?
You know, I have been playing. I've returned to Heyday on mobile.
Wait. What's Heyday?
Heyday is a farming/crafting game.
Okay. You never spoke of it before on this podcast.
Oh, because I played it so long ago. I mean, I played it back when I was working on the Olympic game.
Oh, well, you were still on this podcast.
Right. Well, I mean, I wasn't really having so much time for the podcast back then.
So what's Heyday?
Heyday is a, like I said, it's a farm and crafting game. So, I mean, it might as well just be called Craftville. But it's a really solid game. It's got a really simple to understand UI. It's just one of the best designed games that I've seen in that particular space. So I had been playing it for a long, long time, and then I gave it up because I mean, they've done such a good job with the differentiation of timer settings, and like how long it takes things to grow and or complete. That you can literally sit in that game doing something for like 5 or 6 hours at a time.
Yeah, sort of like Tiny Towers or Zombie Garden.
Right. And so like it was just taking up too much time. So I put it down and moved on to other games. And then a friend of mine asked me, hey, Paul, I need a new game to play. Something that's simple to learn and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, why don't you try Heyday? I mean, that was a great game. And then when I was showing it to him, I got sucked back in.
Let me ask you a question. When you returned to Heyday, did you find a lot of stuff waiting for you? It's like, oh, please come, you know, the brides, they say, oh, if you come back now, we'll give you this and this and this and this, you know, and you come back, even though they didn't ask you to, say you have all this stuff that, you know, is just waiting for you because they were trying to get you back.
Well, there was a lot of content updates in the time that I had been away.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean free stuff that they sent you.
Well, yes, but I wasn't finished.
Oh, okay.
There was a lot of content updates, and there were a lot of things waiting for me. So I'm not really sure which were their normal, oops, our servers went down, here's a couple of hard currency, and which were, hey, we're launched this new feature, so go check it out, and here's some hard currency to help you speed that along. I do know that I ended up with, like, I don't know, 10 or 20 diamonds. Which for them is a lot.
Okay.
You know, like I think every time their server goes down, like, they give you one. And it's just like, oops, you couldn't play for 3 or 4 hours. Sorry. Here's a diamond.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was interesting to see how much had changed since I had stopped playing. And now it's like, I spent 2 hours playing it today already. But the other game that I've been playing a great deal about is an independent PC game called Coming Out on Top.
Okay.
And I think very highly of this game, and it falls in line with my particular research background of what do non-exclusively heterosexual gamers want from their games. So for anybody who falls into that category, do a Google search. Coming out on top video game.
It's a dating sim for very muscular men.
They're not all very muscular.
They all see it. Well... Come on. It was all the photos from this thing. I remember this game. What's it called? There's just a lot of men, and sometimes they're naked. Sometimes they're not.
They were naked, like, one time.
I played the game
all the way through. A whole playthrough ends up, we're like, you know, taking five and a half hours. And they were naked one time. And apparently my happy romantic ending ended with me and the star football player.
Okay,
I tutored him.
Was it?
Yeah, because I tutored him. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So apparently that's why he was doing badly in school, because he was in the closet, and he couldn't deal with his emotions.
Aww.
I know, right? It was so cute. But anyway.
Did you get the pet goldfish?
Did I get the what?
The pet goldfish.
I did get a pet goldfish. His name was Slim. Pop quit. I will give shout outs to anybody who can tell me where I got that name for a goldfish from. Jonah, not you. Don't you spoil it. No Googling.
Okay. You know, in one of them, you actually can hump the goldfish.
I don't believe you.
You don't believe me? I'll send you the screenshot.
You know what? Photoshop can fake anything.
No, this is a screenshot. Anyways.
I don't believe you.
You don't have to believe me. It's true.
No, it's not. Jonah Falcon, you have a history of being a cheat and a liar.
Well,
I wouldn't believe you any farther than I could throw you.
Oh, I don't believe this. I've crashed again. Anyways, speaking of cheating, I went back to Dragon Age Inquisition and I used a trainer to get past one part. Because the thing is, Dragon Age Inquisition is one of those games in which if you don't have the right exact build, you'll have to go back and start over again. And, you know, I hate it when they penalize you for the choices you made, even though they should be the right choices. They just said, oh, no, screw you. We don't care.
Yeah, that just sounds like a very unpopular design philosophy. If you're going to give the player a choice, both choices that are meaningful should take you in meaningful directions, not prevent you from doing game content.
So anyways, so I'm moving on. And the thing is, I want to finish that game just to see the ending. You know, it's at some point, you know, you just really want to see, you know, so that it's like watching a soap or something in which you don't want everybody to be talking about something and you don't know what to say because you didn't follow that episode, you know? So I wanted to do that. Okay. And once again, you know what happened is the stupid shell on Firefox just screwed with me. And I really hate, you know, I'm beginning to hate Firefox it does these Windows shells, which will crash your computer, and you can't really do anything about it unless you close it. You can't even alt-delete and do the task manager because it hangs it up, right? Hangs up everything. And Firefox and Flash Player don't like each other. They don't like each other at all.
Yeah, I mean, I've always preferred to push Chrome on people, but I will warn them that it does end up with memory leaks all over the place.
Problem with Chrome is that
after 5 or 6 hours, you have to shut it down and bring it back up.
But Firefox unfortunately has the plugin, which I love, which blocks anything that you don't want. You know, script it prevents scripts from running unless you allow them, so you can't get viruses. I swear, you know, Firefox, die. You know, I hope. Here's the thing, and this is the thing. You have to be careful because at some point someone's going to release something that's better than yours, and you better have loyal people to stick with your stuff, you know? Because they'll just say, "Oh, you know what? This is better. Bye-bye. Goodbye. I don't want to deal with you anymore. Something better came along." So anyway, now that I'm off my little diatribe, so I went back to Dragon Age Inquisition, and I hope to finish it soon so that I can just let it go, you know. And the thing is, I didn't want to have to use a trainer. You know, the first two Dragon Ages had their own, you know, cheat system, which was very easy. You know, you go to a command console. But since Dragon Age Inquisition was done using the stupid Battlefield engine, I forgot what it's called, there is no way to do the cheat that way. So you have to get trainers. And the problem with trainers is that, you know, malware. You know, you always have to be careful of malware and viruses and all that stuff. And I don't mind cheating because I feel that, you know, if the developer made a mistake, then cheats are the way to fix it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's why I haven't finished Psychonauts, because there is no cheat to get around that very last thing. And I've just gotten to the point where, you know what, I'll just watch the ending on YouTube. I don't need to, you know, I don't have to deal with your mistakes. And if, you know, I know it sounds egotistical, but it's, you know, it's my game now and I want to play it the way I want to play it.
Absolutely. And you know what, that's one of the things that I've loved from the very beginning about EA's approach to the Sims franchise. You've always been able to alter your game however you want, and they'll never stop the community from posting and sharing how to do those things. So if you decide that you are not a particularly delicate player,
you can
or a child,
patches, that
exactly, you could, if that's what you want from your game, that's fine. If you want to sit and design your own, you know, provocative kind of slutty clothing for your avatar, you could do that too. Like, it's your game. We're not going to tell you how to play your game. We've given this to you for payment. Like, so once you've paid for it, you can do whatever you want with it.
Even when they've had something like the store, which in theory is competition for fan mods.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they say, no, the store is here for a reason, but, you know, if you want to make your own clothes, that's fine. You know, and The Sims 4, again, you know, increases that. I believe you can upload your stuff to the store yourself and have people, if they want to use it, you know, that sort of thing.
Well, I think what was really a pivotal success point for the store in The Sims, and I know we're getting off track a little bit, but in the store not competing with community content, was a lot of the community content was reskinning existing meshes, and a lot of the store content was giving players new shaped meshes.
And also, if something became too popular, you know, EA just paid the people who made it and put it in their expense. I mean, you know, if people are making stuff that are really, really good, just pay for it. And then put it on the official store and let everybody else enjoy it too, who might not know about it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. The first one is Joystick no longer scoring reviews, and this comes to us from Joystick. Joystick has announced that it would cease assigning scores to its reviews. According to the site, the very purpose of the score is to define something entirely nebulous and just subjective, fun, as narrowly as possible. The problem is that narrowing down something as broad and fluid as a video game isn't truly useful, especially in today's industry. Between pre-release news, post-release patching, and online connectivity, server stability, and a myriad of other unforeseeable possibilities, attaching a concrete score to a new game isn't practical. More importantly, it's not helpful to our readers. For that reason, above all, we've decided that Joystick will no longer score reviews. We didn't really start reviewing games on a regular basis until 2009, and we didn't start adding scores until 2010. We avoided scores for a long time, thinking that our words should speak for themselves. We did, however, finally decide to append scores to our reviews, at least in part because we wanted Joystick represented on Metacritic. The editorial staff also believed that a Metacritic presence gave Joystick a greater legitimacy as an outlet and, of course, a larger potential audience. Metacritic would later have an unexpected effect on our scoring system. When converted to Metacritic's 100-point scale, each of Joystick's 5 stars translated as a whopping 20 points. Games with recognized flaws but redeemable gameplay, 3 stars according to our guidelines, showed up as a 60 out of 100. Wonderful games that were just shy of greatness, not quite good enough to get 5 stars, saw their 4-star ratings converted to 80 out of 100. We weren't comfortable about the way some games were represented, and after a few months we decided to add half stars to the system. It's nice we were able to reward good ideas that didn't quite come together. We added a half star to Singularity, for example, which initially just scored 3, but the incorporation of half stars was also clearly a capitulation to the industry. Joystick went on to say that some of the games evolved in quality after release, and Metacritic would not reflect our re-reviews. Regardless of what our nuance was, we ascribe to our scores, some will see 5 stars and immediately assume that it means perfect. It doesn't. Others will see 3 stars and assume it means awful. It doesn't. These scores really didn't translate to the 90 out of 100 or 60 out of 100 you see on Metacritic either. Okay, I'll give you first shot, Paul.
You know, personally, I've never really been a fan of Metacritic, and it's really any review that gives things, you know, a number grade. And exactly for this reason, games are a subjective art form. Something that I like, Jonah, you probably might hate, because we're different kinds of gamers.
You might love, I might not like.
Right.
Okay.
I believe that's what I said.
I thought you said that I like artistic games. You don't.
No. I mean, you'll probably hate. Because we're different kinds of gamers and we want different things from our games. I preferred back in the day when Nintendo Power used to do video game reviews, they would do just a simple thumbs up, thumbs down. But they had an entire panel of reviewers, like 7 or 8 staff members. And each of them would be into different things. So if it was a role-playing game, they'd get like the 3 of their 7 reviewers who actually liked role-playing games, and each of them just gave it a thumbs up and thumbs down. And you learned after a month or two, or after a couple of purchases, which of those reviewers had the taste closest to yours.
You know, the thing is that I used to do a star review system with, you know, and mostly because it wasn't because it's just, you know, it felt like this, you know, it felt like a 3.5 star game. But the problem is that, and we've discussed this years ago, is that now the industry is becoming over-reliant on Metacritic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just to highlight that point, I've literally heard it said about a video game that unless it has a 93 or higher Metacritic score, it was a failure.
Well, that's
like, but it sold 500 million units. Like, what are you talking about? Oh yeah, but it was a 92 on Metacritic.
Well, that's not my thing about it. This will probably hit you as well. Is that people weren't getting bonuses because their game didn't achieve an 85 on Metacritic? You know, I got it.
Oh yeah.
No, you don't get your bonus. You know,
but we sold 2 million copies. What do you mean?
And then you have these ads and Gamma Sutra and all that. We want people who worked on a 90 Metacritic game. You know, yeah, but you know, I worked on a 60 Metacritic game, but that doesn't mean my work sucked. You know, I'm an artist. You know, look at all these backgrounds and all that stuff. You know, I did really good work on that game, even though it didn't play very well. Well, guess what? We don't care. You got a 60. Your game got the game that you worked on got a 60 Metacritic. So that means that whatever work you did on it must have been terrible.
Yeah, it's you know what? Metacritic is a tool that is misused by a number of people. And I think that too often, especially when dealing with the business of a subjective art form, which exactly is the video games industry, people are looking for concrete answers before they do anything to eschew themselves from getting blamed. And that's why I think we've, as an industry, become overly reliant on these, you know, out of 100 metric systems, not singling out Metacritic alone, but, you know, I mean, even Joystick's 5-star system, they said that it didn't really reflect what people thought of it.
Well, the thing is that, you know, when people, you know, people think, oh, it's got a 60, it must suck, you know. And the thing is that that's basically the low average of a bad game. I mean, truly horrible games will get 20s and 30s, right? But, you know, but quote unquote a bad. The thing is, I've had 3-star games that I've really loved, because here's the thing. I'll give you an example. Cordyceps Saga, you know, which was a board game, right? It was a computer game board game, right? Got a lot of middling reviews. But the thing is that they said, you know, if you like this sort of type of thing, you're going to enjoy it because this is for you, you know?
Right. You know, like it.
Well, you know, you might appreciate it a little bit more because you're into it.
Right. And then there's personal biases on behalf of the reviewers that are almost never accounted for. Example, if Jonah, you hate an RPG game, you're just like, eh, whatever, I had to review it, meh, 40. But if I love RPG games and I know a whole lot about them and the mechanics and how they work, and I review it, I might give it an 80 or an 85 and be like, you know what, it had some bugs, I'm not going to lie, but like, it's a lot better than somebody else might give it credit for.
Or it may just be an average game, you know, nah, it's not that great, but people who are into that genre will like it a little bit more because, you know, they do, you know, they get to see the nuances of what that thing is doing. You know, like if you like our JRPGs, you know, you may say, oh, you know, I don't know about this game, you know.
Right. Especially if there's a fewer number of entries in that category in any particular season.
Yeah.
So like if there aren't a lot of new RPG games coming out in a year, it's like maybe the one that isn't really, you know, a 1,000,000,000% awesome is a good enough content to enjoy for the $30 that you part with it. You know, it's priced appropriately. The expectations are set appropriately. It wasn't overpromised, Peter Molyneux.
There's also one other issue with a number score and all that stuff. There's a lot of people who are just plain lazy.
Yeah,
they don't read this review. They just see the score and say, "Okay, that's fine." You know what? If you don't have a review score, you know, people actually have to read what you had to say about the game, and they might actually have to formulate an opinion. Gasp.
Yeah, well, everybody else's opinions are wrong.
But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I put a 4-star review. People, oh, we're gonna buy this game. You say, wait, read the review. No, we already saw the score. Who cares about what you had to say about the game and what you liked or what you didn't like and all that stuff? You know, we saw the score. Your words mean nothing.
Yeah, that's really the frustrating point about all of this.
If you write a review and you don't put a score attached to it, people actually have to read the review to think and see what you thought of it. And you know what you can get with that review? Complex emotions. I liked this, but this bothered me. I did not like this part of the game, but this part of the game I really enjoyed. That sort of thing, you know? Because believe it or not, games aren't perfect. You know, there are stuff, even your favorite games, even if a game that you love, you could play it from here to Timbuktu, there's always going to be at least one or two things that really annoy you a little bit. You know, it's like, oh, geez, do I have to do this again? You know, that sort of, you know, there is no such thing as a perfect game, right? I mean, what was your favorite Zelda game?
It's probably A Link to the Past.
Okay. Was there any part of The Link to the Past that you said, oh, okay, fine. You know, it wasn't ruining the game for you, but it's sort of like, this.
My least favorite part of that game is rescuing Zelda from the Hyrule Castle and sneaking out with her through the dungeon. Okay. At the time, it was kind of cool, and now it's like,
mission?
This part again?
It was an escort mission?
It was an escort mission.
Yeah. I mean.
And you know what? I mean, she didn't like hinder the process in any way. It was just like, you have to get from point A to point B, and this is the only way you can go. In a Zelda game, it kind of doesn't really work.
It's sort of like having to eat the broccoli along with the rest of your gourmet meal. You don't like the broccoli, but you have to get through it just to have the rest of it, you know?
Exactly.
You just have to get through it, and then, okay, fine. So, like I said, you know, there's no perfect game. And the thing is that when someone gives something a 5-star review, you have people saying, well, this and this and this weren't good in it. How could you give it a perfect score when it obviously wasn't perfect? And my response is, it wasn't perfect, but this is why I really, really liked it, you know? I mean, it isn't. I'm not saying a five out of five doesn't mean it's a perfect game. It just means that it's a really, really, really good game. And I suggest to anybody who enjoys this type of game to play it immediately, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect game.
Yeah. So anyways,
it's just not going to exist. There's constraints of, you know, budget and time and all sort, you know, and a human qualitative factor, it's just not going to happen. Sorry.
Like Half-Life and Half-Life 2. I love those games, but in Half-Life 1, I had to turn on the God mode for the last part of Zen because I just didn't want to have to deal with it. And in Half-Life 2, there's a lot of nothing going on. There's a long stretch. I mean, physics puzzles were wow back in 2004. Now they're just dull, you know? Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul. New Harmonic.
New Harmonic survey points to Rock Band 4, and this comes to us from GamesRadar. It looks like Harmonix is fixing to get the band back together after an extended hiatus. A new survey sent out by the music game developer asks fans about their interest in the franchise, how many working instrument peripherals they still own, and what they'd like to see in a new Rock Band title. The survey, which you're free to fill out yourself, asks which new-gen platforms you own and how you'd like a new Rock Band to be packaged, by itself, with a single instrument, or bundled up with a full set of drums, guitar, and microphone. It also lets you rank a bunch of elements like a quote, fixed campaign mode, a new weekly DLC, and local multiplayer in order of importance. Harmonix had said before that it intends to ship Rock Band of some kind in its generation of consoles.
In this generation.
Yeah, so in this generation. Is that
I'm a big Rock Band fan. The thing, I did fill out that survey, and the one thing that I wanted most was be able to have the music that I paid a ton for transfer over to the new game. I don't care if I have to pay $5, $10, $20 to do that, you know, because they did have a charge when you wanted to import your Rock Band 1 to Rock Band 2. I just don't want to have to pay for all of it again. You know, I want, you know, I'll pay the licensing fees. I just want to have all my stuff back, you know? So that was my number one thing. I just want all the songs that I bought plus the ones, you know, that you're going to be releasing.
Absolutely. And I really couldn't agree with you more. The problem is that in a perfect world, it would work that way. But in a world that we live in, which consists of, you know, timed marketing deals and, you know, you're only allowed to work with our music for X amount of time before you have to pay us again, that might make it fantastically prohibitively expensive for Harmonix to keep that up.
Well, I mean, not really, because in theory, if you already bought it, you already bought it, so you just have to pay a minor fee for it. That's why you could import, I think, like something like 5,000 of songs that you had bought on Rock Band 1 for just $5, you know. So, I mean, there is a cost, but they're defraying the cost over to the player, and the player gets to decide if they want to pay for it, you know.
Right, but each of those 1,000 songs that you own is a separate deal that has to be negotiated with a different music studio.
Well, that's why it costs.
Right, but it takes forever to get all those deals in place. I mean, for example, you know, the 1960s Batman TV show, it didn't come out on DVD for decades, not because there was no interest, but because it took forever to sort out all the legal problems.
Oh, what show hasn't been on DVD because of music problems? Murphy Brown. Why? Because they did this different 60s song every episode. They had a different one. I mean, they did a lot of Rescue Me, you know, but a lot of times they just did a separate 60s song, and that's why it hasn't been out on video, because they can't deal with the music licensing for that, you know. But this, you know, but here the difference is that Harmonix is actually working with music companies in the first place. You know, this is they're actually working within the music industry, so it's
right,
a lot easier for them, you know.
Well, yeah, but they're also kind of more at the music industry's mercy.
Well, I mean,
you know, like they really can't afford to piss somebody off over, you know, a B-side song, because they might take their entire A catalog with them in the argument.
Well, you know, it's very easy. All Harmonix has to say is, okay, we want this. Just let us know what songs you want us to promote, you know, because that's what they did. There were a lot of unknown songs that were in Rock Band that you never played. That's why they were there, because they were being promoted by the music company who wanted their music on Rock Band. It didn't hurt that MTV was working alongside Harmonix at the time. It'd be interesting. And then Electronic Arts, it'll be interesting to see now what they can do. But, you know, like I said, you know, they know the area that they're working on, and they really haven't annoyed anybody, really. I mean, they're in good working relationship with all these companies. That said, let's talk about
Rock. Well, because they have to be.
Yeah. Let's talk about, I take it you played a lot of Rock Band. Have you?
I'm sorry, did you just ask if I played a lot of Rock Band?
Yeah.
I played a modest amount of Rock Band.
Okay,
I mean, I never had the time to develop the dexterity. that would take to be like an expert player, but like I would
neither
be
able did
to
I.
join
That's
in on medium.
Difficult.
You know, I would be able to join in on it. My problem was the easy level was not easy enough.
Oh.
Like, I just wanted to be able to hop in with my, like.
Well, they did have.
Just because you're adding four buttons doesn't mean that it's easy. And just because you're only playing with three buttons doesn't mean it's interesting enough.
Well, didn't you never play the no-fail mode then? Because they did
have
that.
Then what's
the
point of that?
Well, I mean, well, the thing is that you still get scores. You just can't be kicked out because you're not playing well enough.
Well, my preference would be for, you know, to have an easy mode where you know you'll use all the buttons and you don't feel like an idiot.
Okay.
I mean, because that's how you train to get up to the higher levels.
Well, you know what?
You don't just say, here, now deal with this new button for no reason. And it's like, but that finger doesn't work.
Well, guess what? I happen to know people at Harmonix, and I will relay that to them. I know people who want a five-button mode. They just want it to be very easy.
Right. And you know, especially, I think the big rock bands that I had was like 80s or something. But the point being, you know, when you go through single player mode, like it kind of tells you like which songs are harder than other songs, but there's no way any of that is in when you're looking through a huge pile of songs trying to play with your friends over at their house, you know, all of all the DLC. So it was just like, unless you're playing along, you know, one player mode and you happen to know that Talk Dirty to Me is easier than Highway to Hell, just because the order in which they were presented, then you're kind of gonna be SOL as a novice to intermediate player.
So anyways, it just so happens that our question of the week is, what was your favorite part, if any, of Rock Band? So I'll ask that right now since it's appropriate. What was your favorite part of Rock Band?
Single player mode.
Really? Okay. I like the fixed campaign mode myself. And I was basically always vocals because that was my thing, you know. It was easier. I played hard. I played on the hardest level of vocals. That's how good I was at it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, but the other thing I liked was going online and doing it with everybody else. And the real thing is that no one ever wanted to do vocals. So I always had people who were looking for vocals, you know, to get high scores and stuff like that. So. But the fixed campaign mode, aside from being able to import my songs, that's probably number one. Anyways, this next item is a follow-up to something we've been following. Hatred gets an AO rating in the U.S., and this comes to us from Eurogamer. Civilian mass-murdering game Hatred is the third game in history to receive the dreaded AO, adults-only rating, from the U.S. ratings board, the ESRB, despite it not having any sexual content whatsoever. Well, I'm not quite convinced why Hatred got AO rating while it lacks any sexual content, but it's still some kind of achievement to have be the second game in history getting AO rating for violence and harsh language only developer destructive creations wrote in its form. Even if this violence wasn't really that bad and this harsh language is not overused, the guy from ESRB, by the way, very nice, polite, and cooperative, told me that it's all about the context in which people are getting which the people they're testing gameplay video on will see. Examining the developer's claim on the ESRB side, it appears that Hatred is indeed the second title to receive AO, which the first one was Thrill Kill. If Jordan was around, he could tell you about that game because it was an unreleased PlayStation 1 fighting game. Hatred was at one point pulled from Steam, if I remember we discussed this, but then reinstated a day later when Valve founder Gabe Newell apologized for the rash decision to pull it. It quickly rose to become the most requested game on Steam, where it's been since greenlit. We've requested comment from Valve on whether the newest ESRB rating will affect Valve's decision to sell it on its popular marketplace. The developer said, I would prefer to get the standard M rating because with AO we have problems to get the get to consoles in the future. But on the other hand, we think you guys, our fans, will. On the other hand, I think you guys would be disappointed with it. Huh? I'm trying to figure out what he's saying there. I would prefer to get a standard mature rating because with adults only we have problems to get to consoles in the future. But on the other hand, I think you guys, our fans, would be disappointed with it. I'm curious to see what Peggy will give us. By the way, Peggy is the European version of the ESRB. But here's the thing. You made a game in which you non-contextually murder civilians and police officers. There's no satire in it. There's no retribution for, you know, consequence for it. Like in Grand Theft Auto, if you start murdering people and police, you get a wanted rating and eventually either be shot down, put in jail, or whatever, you know. You just made a game that's killing people and getting scores for it. So that's why that and Thrill Kill are both adults only, you know. And as much as I don't like the NC-17/AO rating, if this game deserves it because it's not really, you know, it's not really trying to have, you know, it's not, it's complex, but I think an AO rating is appropriate for it.
Well, personally, I am more annoyed overall about the stigma associated with an AO game and the double standard between sex and violence in this country in all media.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. You know, that's the other thing is that, you know, in Germany, they no way this game would never be. They would ban it before you could even blink your eyes, you know, because, you know, the thing is that this is a puritanical country. We think sex is dirty, but violence is just A-okay. I mean, we could do an entire political podcast on that subject alone, you know, with a gun mentality and the shaming of sex and all that stuff, you know.
But I'm just gonna acknowledge that as a point, and I'm going to put it right there in front, and now we're just going to move on to my next point. You know, I really think that it's time for our industry, for our consumer society to destigmatize an NC-17 or adults-only rating. Because you know what? God damn it. I've survived on this planet for 20 years and I'm an adult and I have a right to purchase whatever kind of entertainment I find appealing.
You know, there
and
is
I shouldn't
movie.
Be made to feel guilty about that.
Have you heard of the movie, This Movie Is Not Yet Rated?
Yes.
Okay. So if you, that's our Netflix suggested viewing for today is This Movie Is Not Yet Rated, which will explain how broken the rating system is.
Oh, the rating system for the movie industry is completely broken, as that documentary will point out. But I can't suspect that the rating system for the video games industry is much different either.
Well, here's the thing.
It's somebody's subjective opinion about what they feel is too much.
But here's
that's why we shouldn't stigmatize if we're going to do it that way.
Here's the difference between the ESRB and the movie ratings is that one, ESRB at least tells you why it's giving the rating. You know, it'll explicitly tell you why, you know. The other thing is they don't lie about who's viewing these games, right? I mean, the MPAA claims, oh, we have parents with children. When if you saw the movie, yeah, 60-year-old people, you know, who are childless, you know, all these, it's one big fat lie, right? And the thing is, one thing about ESRB, at least they've been very, 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 very consistent. You know, they haven't been unfair. They haven't tried to censor anybody, really, you know, by, you know, saying this is, you know, having, they don't, the ESRB has never had a double standard. Let me put it that way, you know. They've always been upfront. They've always been transparent.
Well, I mean, let's remember that point about sex and violence.
Well, I mean, that's
a double standard.
Yeah, you know, I guess. But the thing is that at least they're consistent about that too. I mean,
Right. I mean, they are consistently offering a double standard.
Here's the thing: is that what's called most of the sex AOs are still again non-contextual. You know, you could have heavy duty sex scenes in, say, Mass Effect, in which you get to see Dorian's wonderfully sculpted ass while they're screwing around, you know. But you can't, you know, porno game in which all you're doing is a sort of like a customer event. Let's see if you can aim the right way, you know. I mean, we're not talking about Apple here. Apple is completely unreasonable too, you know, in which health education stuff is considered not allowed, you know. Because it's dirty and icky, you know. So you'll have really strong sexual content in games too that'll earn them an M rating. I think the SRB just has a problem with non-contextual stuff. If it isn't motivated, you know, if it isn't part of the story, if there isn't anything around it, you know, I mean, you know, you have this game, you know, like a Mass Effect or Dragon Age or stuff like that, you know. They're not
My problem isn't with the ESRB or the way that it rates its games. It's the fact that getting an adults-only rating is a friggin' death sentence because stores like Target and Walmart won't carry your game retail. Apple won't put it in their in the App Store. I mean, God forbid. You know, how does a regular adult get their entertainment that they choose to watch? I mean,
that's why the ESRB is very, very liberal about it, though.
Right, but it's private industry censorship.
I think the only time they ever actually gave something an AO, which was for contextual, was the hot coffee, only because it was included without people's consent, you know, without people knowing about it, you know. So it's sort of like you have to be – they expect transparency from other people too. You know, that's the problem. The thing is, you know, like I said – now, reversing that, for something to get the AO rating for violence, you know, it just tells you how much this violent this game is. I mean, there's over the top, right? So, I mean, and the thing is, I don't think this game was going to be, even if it was mature rated, it was going to be sold in Walmart either, you know. I don't think it was ever going to get that far. For one thing, you know, Microsoft and Sony would probably say, no, you can't put this on our consoles.
Yeah, again, private industry censorship.
But the thing is,
private sector censorship.
But here's the thing that's see, buying their console.
They have no right.
What?
They have no right to do that. They're not God.
Well, it is their console.
But together, it's a monopoly against adults-only content.
PC is different because you know it's more egalitarian. You know, everybody can have it. You know, and they like you know this game is going to have its fans, and they're going to buy the game. I mean. So, like I said, I don't see a problem with it getting AO here. You know, I do have a problem with the stigmatism of AO, in that people, adults are not allowed to buy the stuff they want unless they go wear their dirty raincoats and go to the back of a store, so to speak. You know, but in any hand, it did deserve an AO rating. This wasn't, you know, like, oh, well, they're just nitpicking, you know, and they're overly sensitive. No, they were sensitive enough, you know. What happens with the AO rating is up to Valve now, because their primary store is going to be Valve, right? And it depends. Mm-hmm. We'll see what Valve does if Valve allows an AO rated game to be sold in their marketplace. That's going to be the real question here. Any response to that?
No, I have kind of said everything that I need to say on the entire topic.
Okay.
Because now I would just be repeating myself and proselytizing.
Right. So now we're going to get to a...
Besides, I want to move on to the next story now that I've looked at what the title is.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Did I read this one or did you read this one? I mean...
You read the AO one.
Okay. So now it's your turn.
Disney and Activision both claim landslide victory in Toys to Life category. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Activision and Disney are clearly the two biggest players in the Toys to Life category right now, but there's some debate as to which one can lay claim to the title of category leader. With the industry tracking NPD Group releasing their year-end U.S. retail sales data yesterday, both Activision and Disney proclaimed themselves the victor.
Hold on one second. I just love now there is an official category for this Toys to Life category.
Oh my God, it's brilliant.
It has a new genre.
Absolutely.
You were saying it was brilliant, right?
It's going to be, I think, as big as the rhythm game industry or the, you know, the rock band game industry.
Well, hopefully it'll have the same kind of crash.
I don't know. If it's oversaturated,
well,
maybe.
I don't, we'll discuss this after.
I'm reading. Disney Interactive president James Picciaro touted Infinity's success in a statement saying, the Disney Infinity platform is now the clear market leader and positioned for continued growth in the years to come. Citing the NPD Group's data, Disney claimed Infinity 2.0 outperformed Skylanders Trap Team in local sales revenue for 2014, despite being available on three fewer platforms. On the platforms where both games were released, Disney said Infinity's 2.0 starter pack bundles outsold Trap Teams by 72% for the full year. Predictably, Activision Publishing CEO Eric Hirschberg had a different takeaway. Hirschberg's related statement proclaiming Skylanders Trap Team, quote, the top-selling kids game in the world, citing worldwide data compiled from NPD Group, GFK, and Activision's internal estimates. Skylanders continues its leadership position as the number one kids video game franchise globally, as well as in the U.S. by wide margins, Hirschberg said. As a global franchise in 2014, Skylanders is 30% bigger than its nearest competitor, and Skylander Trap Team outsold the nearest competitor globally by 17%. As the creators of the Toys to Life category, we are thrilled to continue to lead it for the third consecutive year. This year also saw a third major player enter the Toys to Life category in the form of Nintendo. While the Mario Maker didn't claim victory in the game, it carved out a chunk of the market, announcing that 2014 saw U.S. sales of roughly 2.6 million Amiibo figures that interact with a variety of Nintendo titles. One such game, Super Smash Bros. For Wii U, has sold 1.3 million copies in the U.S. to date.
Yeah. So,
And this is why I got into games industry, because every once in a while, something awesome comes along and gets everybody really excited. And I definitely think that for the next 3 or 4 years, it's going to be the Toys to Life category.
Here's the thing. I don't think this will have a crash the same way the music industry, music game thing did, because with the these are just still, you know, figurines, you know, and you really can't run out of, you know, you may run out of shelf space for the figurines, but really, who doesn't like putting figurines? You can show them off and as decorations, you know. You can't really do that with a Rock Band stuff.
Right, like physically, they take up a lot less room. I mean, that Rock Band drum kit was ungodly.
Yeah, I'm still trying to, I may just throw it out. No. But yeah, and the thing is that what's it called? Basically, these figures, they're just DLC for the most part. You know, when you buy a figurine, they're DLC.
It's a new way of doing DLC.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, the next step is going to have posable, you know, figurines, and that, you know, so kids can play with them as figures, you know, as action figures, not just put them on top of the whatever scanning device they have and just play it in the game. You know, they'll be able to, you know, pose it and do all that stuff, you know, like we used to do with our little Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker action figures and all that stuff. But also, you know, this reminds me of something that for a very long time, one of the hardest markets to capture was the family market. Now, I know Nintendo, you know, basically, you know, had that market with their thing, but, you know, they captured, you know, both Skylanders and Infinity are capturing the family market on the Xbox platform and the PlayStation platform, you know.
Right, because parents want something that they can understand quickly to play with their kids and hop in and out, and that's exactly what Infinity and Skylander are offering them.
You know, they see Elsa and Anna and say, oh, okay, I get it, you know.
Right. And especially where, you know, your kids are all excited about getting a new figure and you don't have to relearn a complete new game to play with them. Like, really, if you press the X button, it doesn't matter which character you have, you're going to do their melee attack. And if you press the Y button, you're going to do their ranged attack. They all are kind of the same.
Well, sort of like the Lego games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway...
But the only restriction I see here is which you're going to collect. Now I know that you basically started, you know, just focusing on the Infinity characters, right? And some people say, you know, I want to do the Nintendo stuff because I like Mario better than Wreck-It Ralph, that sort of thing, you know. And,
well, I would love to get a little bit more involved in
Amiibo,
in the Amiibo figures as well. However, I don't really see that the games that it's compatible with are the kind of games that I want to play.
Basically, Super Smash Brothers, from what I understand, that really they're the most compatible with, you know. And unless you like Super Smash Brothers, although, you know, it'd be interesting to see if they incorporate it into Mario Kart.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's it. They've already announced that they're going to, and it's just kind of like, I don't really like either of those games.
And, you know, let's face it, you're a big Disney fan, so you're gonna want to do the Vanellope and the...
Yeah, but I'm just as big as a Nintendo fan. It's just they're not giving me a product that I want to play with. But I think getting back to the Disney Activision article, you know what? I think they're both right, because if you look at the wording of their statements, they're using substantially different language.
So Disney's saying is that here in the U.S., on specific things, and I think they're saying Wii U and 3DS, we're doing gangbusters, while Activision is saying, well, around the entire world on every single platform, you know, because Skylanders had the head start. You know, they started a year and a half before Infinity. So they have people who are dedicated to that simply for the fact that it was there first. They have their figures. You know, their figures work with the new games too. So, you know, why spend the extra money to start focusing on something else, you know? So they already had the base. That's what they're saying. We had the base, while Disney is saying, well, you know what? We have the characters, and people love our characters, and we're going to, what's it called? And people are, we're faster, you know? They have the faster growing market right now.
Well, I think that what they're doing is that Disney is comparing just the 2.0 sales to just the trap edition of Skylander sales.
Yeah. Like I said, and, the figurines and, from the earlier kind of, Skylander still work. Yeah.
Right. Well, the earlier... Never mind. But it's just like, you know, it's like comparing the NES and the Genesis. You know, they're like, okay, so this year that's what happened. It doesn't mean that either one's out of this race for the long time. And I would definitely urge... you know, the entire gaming population to see it as the new, you know, Nintendo-Sega war.
Mm.
But it doesn't mean you can't have both. Just because I don't want Skylanders,
if you have the money,
you shouldn't want Skylanders.
If you have the money to pay for both, that's...
I mean, they're both great games. Don't get me wrong.
I have not played either, but I know how they play. I've seen them in action, you know.
Well, you're missing out. You are missing out, my friend. You are.
If I was to get either, I would probably go for Infinity. Simply because I recognize the characters more. You know, and I was never really that big a Spyro fan growing up anyway. Because that basically, you know, for those who don't know, Skylanders is basically the universe of Spyro the Dragon. You know, the purple dragon that used to breathe fire. So it's based around his universe. So we're going to move on to the next item. And you notice I italicized two of them. We're not going to be doing them. We're going to move straight on to this one. Microsoft maintaining $349 price point on Xbox Ones. Microsoft has sent word that its Xbox One console was the top-selling console in both November and December in the U.S. And, quote, weekly average sales during these months outpaced the 360 by 50% at the same point of its lifestyle, the company noted. To celebrate holiday sales success, I'm fucking this up. I'm going to start from the beginning. Microsoft has just sent word that the Xbox One console was the top-selling console in both November and December in the U.S., and, quote, weekly average sales during these months outpaced the Xbox 360 by 50% at the same point of its lifestyle. To celebrate the holiday sales success, Microsoft has said that it's introducing a $350 price point starting on Friday, which was last Friday, January 17th, although in reality it's actually a continuation of the holiday pricing that helped the company get the sales lift. According to Mike Nichols, of corporate VP of marketing, building off the price, building off the record-setting holiday, we're excited to announce a new promotion which fans in the U.S. can buy an Xbox One at the special price of $349. We are thankful for all the excitement for the Xbox One this holiday and proud to offer more fans the amazing games lineup, Xbox Live gaming community, and continual innovation that the Xbox One fans have come to enjoy. In addition to the hardware sales, Microsoft commented that, quote, the Xbox One sold more games through November and December, blah, 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 blah. We don't need to know that. The NPD reported that next-gen consoles and software earned over $13 billion in the U.S. So basically what they're saying is everybody bought our system when it was $350. We're going to keep it at $350.
Right.
You know, wow, we sold it for less and it's selling more. There's an idea.
They're doing everything short of saying, oops, we overpriced our console.
Basically. Although, you know, a year, I'm pretty sure the Xbox One components cost a little cheaper now. Not much cheaper, but cheaper that they can afford to do this. Not to mention, like I said, they're coming up on this year and they have big titles that they want to sell, like Halo, you know? Because here's the thing. There's a lot of people who bought the Xbox 360 who did not buy the Xbox One because it was too expensive, and they're drumming their fingers waiting for the price to come down so that they could play Halo on the Xbox One, you know, and all that other stuff. Because, you know, one thing we know about consumers is that they're very, very, very patient. They will wait for something to drop their price, you know, and if you don't drop it fast enough, they'll just move on.
Yeah, it's like, here's an idea, guys. Why don't you just price your consoles appropriately the first time? Instead of trying to gouge everybody.
To be fair, basically the $100 increase came from the Kinect. And while I still love my Kinect, you know, they were trying to enforce a Kinect on people. And people just said, no, it's too expensive. We don't need Kinect. We'll wait until you release the console with no Kinect in it. And then we'll buy it. So we're going to move on to the next item and Windows 10.
Windows 10 includes in-home game streaming from Xbox One, and this comes to us from Ars Technica. At a Windows 10 event today, Microsoft's Phil Spencer announced that Windows 10 users will soon be able to stream any Xbox One game to a Windows 10 PC or tablet. After a one-time setup, an Xbox app on the Windows 10 device will show all the games available on the Xbox One, letting users stream those games across a local network. The demo showed a stream starting within a few seconds and using an Xbox One controller paired through the PC. players can turn off the Xbox One from the PC when they're done. The streaming function is part of a new integrated Xbox app that will link PC gaming to the world of Xbox Live. The app, which comes preloaded in every Windows 10 PC and tablet, lets users chat via voice or text across platforms between Windows 10 and Xbox platforms. Users can also keep track of their friends by gamertag across devices. The Xbox app will let users play video clips shared by friends and easily share their own clips of any Windows game. The game recordings even enabled ahead of time, so this functionality will automatically capture the last 30 seconds before users choose to save a clip. Even titles launched before Windows 10 existed can be recorded and shared through the app. Microsoft also vaguely teased the ability for the app developers to create Windows Universal apps, which will run on the Xbox One. We don't think we'll see millions of people using Excel on Xbox, but for developers who want to move apps over to the TV screen, this will make it easier to do so, Microsoft's Phil Spencer said. Microsoft earlier announced that Windows 10 would be free to Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 users for the first year of release.
Yeah, I want to play Extreme Excel on my Xbox One. Yeah, spreadsheets like you never did it before on your console. I can just picture that. But I think they sort of buried the lead. I mean, being able to make Windows Universal apps that work on Windows 10 and the Xbox One, I think developers would kind of prick their ears up on that one a little bit more than being able to stream, you know, the Xbox One onto your PC.
I mean, to me, the entire thing just kind of sounds like they are replicating the same second screen experience that Nintendo has done with the Wii U.
You
keep the console powering the game, just decide where you want to see it, on your PC or on your TV or on your tablet.
Sort of. The difference here is that while you're playing on your tablet, this allows you to do more functionality because what happens is it's a two-way street, you know. You can run play movies from your PC.
How much of a draw is that, really?
I'm telling you, Windows Media Center was really popular on the 360. I mean, people use that a lot.
If you're really immersed in a flow of a game, are you going to stop and be like, oh, I should be recording, I should be sharing this video? No, you're going to keep playing the game.
So what happens, something incredible happens and you say, Xbox, record that. And basically it does record, you know, what's it called? You know, you don't really stop in the flow of your game. Just something incredible happens and you say, Xbox, record that. It saves the clip and then after you've played all your stuff, you go look back later and see what happened, you know. And then you can edit it from there with the software that was included in the Xbox One. My thing is that why didn't they do this earlier? This is what I've been suggesting for the past 5 years. You know, and not, I'm talking about the Xbox 360. What I wanted to hear was that the Xbox Windows 8 would allow you to play Xbox 360 games on your PC. You know, sort of like a backwards compatibility, sort of, but instead of playing it on your console, you're now playing it on the PC, which you'll always have. You know, I'd like to see this also with the Xbox 360. Why not allow me to play my Xbox 360 games on my PC? You know, so I don't have to keep switching between the Xbox One and the Xbox 360 because my newer console is going to win every time. You know? And also, you know, like I said, this is one step that Microsoft needs to do to get indie developers back. Because when you say anything you develop for the Windows 10 will also be usable on our Xbox One, you know, that, you know, it's sort of like Unity without having to have Unity, you know?
Hmm.
I mean, also, I hope this means that, it's too late for that. But it also is something that I was all screaming about before. Remember when Microsoft was heavily pushing Windows Messenger and they put it on the 360, even though most people were using Xbox Live messaging? And what they should have done was create an app that put a tray on your thing so that basically when people message you on Xbox Live, they message your computer instead. The exact opposite of what they did. Except they try to force Windows Messenger and no one wants to use Windows Messenger. You know, I'd rather have Xbox Live on my computer, you know, as a tray. So, I mean, it is being able to do something while your TV is occupied is always nice. You know, it's a little different because basically your Nintendo is working through your tablet, right?
Right.
I'm trying to figure out if it'll allow you to watch TV while playing an Xbox One game on your PC. You know, because basically watching TV is a different app. You know, if you'd have to snap that app, you know. But like I said, this is something I'm really happy about, simply because, you know, sometimes I don't want to, you know, I want to be able to have my Xbox One, you know, I want to do it on my PC rather than doing it on my Xbox One, you know, just play my Xbox One game. But I wish they would do it with the Xbox 360 even more.
And I think it's starting to set an expectation for the future of console gaming that you're going to be, you know, in a generation or two, you know, you'll be able to just buy the console and then have it automatically Wi-Fi synced to any screen in your house and choose where and when you need to play it, which is going to be great for large families, by the way.
I mean, Sony is trying to do this with their play your PlayStation 4 games anywhere on your Vita. You know, the problem is that that's a Wi-Fi connection, or at least an internet connection, and people have said it's really slow the further away you move back away. I mean, they're indicating this is sort of like a LAN experience, even if it's mm-hmm. just a wireless LAN, which is a lot faster. You know, you don't have to worry about, you know, that sort of thing when you have a wireless LAN. Or it could be a wired LAN. I mean,
but you know what? At least interest in these things is kind of like a proof of concept.
Basically. So we're going to move on to the last item. Best Buy canceling multiple pre-order units of limited edition Majora's Mask new 3DS XL. And this comes to us from VG247. Multiple sources reported overnight Best Buy has canceled some pre-orders for the limited edition of Majora's Mask new 3DS XL, which is a bundle. As of press time, it appears to only affect those who pre-ordered more than one system. Only one system was allotted per order, so cancellation notices were sent out to comply with the restriction. Those who ordered more than one unit received an email stating that their initial order had been reduced to one unit. This includes customers who ordered more than one Majora's Mask new 3DS XL using the same credit card or shipping address, regardless of whether the multiple units were ordered or for other members of the household. With quantities limited for the system, as is the case with many special editions, many retailers opt for the one-per-customer limit, giving all customers a fair chance, so this is nothing new on Best Buy's part. To compensate for the order reduction, Best Buy offered $50 credit code in the email, which customers could use on their next purchase. However, some customers have reported the $50 compensation credit was not included with their cancellation email. I'm pretty sure Best Buy would correct that. But this just tells me that, Zelda is still pretty popular. And
Zelda's always popular. Zelda's going nowhere.
B, the 3DS is really starting to pick up steam.
3DS has always picked up steam.
Yeah.
It's fairly, you know, it's fairly saturated their market.
I don't have a 3DS XL yet, or a 3DS of it all. Now, when I was talking to you about perhaps getting a 3DS, you advised that I get the 2DS.
For the kind of games, that, you know, for the kind of gamer that you are, yes. I mean, I know you have, you know, I know that you don't have perfect vision, and you what? Don't seem that, and you don't seem that interested in the 3D experience.
Well, I mean,
so if you're looking to save money, then yes, the 2D is just as playable.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I probably would get the 3DS. The sort of person I am, I'd probably get one of the old 3DSs, you know, the normal sized ones that were released around launch, which are now really cheap because they're no longer the new hotness. They're not the XL, they're not they're not the 2DS and all that stuff, you know, and Pokemon is Pokemon, whether you have 3D or not, you know.
Right. And that's the thing. A lot of the games don't make use of the 3D feature, so you don't really need it. It's just kind of an extra bell and whistle that if you can't afford, you won't really miss that much. Yeah, but I have an XL. I mean, I had to check to make sure I have an XL, but yeah, that's what it is.
Question. How interested are you in having a reboot of Majora's Mask?
Not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic game, so that's not the reason why I'm not interested. I'm just kind of at a place where I'm realizing that there is more video game content out there than I can ever consume in 3 lifetimes. And I kind of don't really feel like I have all the extra leisure time to go back and play even fantastic games. Like, I want to go play something new.
Yeah, that's why that's your thing with Kingdom Hearts 3. So, I don't want Kingdom Hearts 2.5. I want Kingdom Hearts 3.
Right, exactly. Like, and if Kingdom Hearts 3 has nothing but the same worlds and the same tired storyline, then I'm going to be really annoyed.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by same tired storyline? You mean just having the same type of story or just recycling the same storyline?
No, I'm a little over just reliving the plots of the movies over and over and over again. You know why? Because I've seen them all. That's why I bought Kingdom Hearts, damn it, because I'm a fan. It's like, it's the same thing. It's like, how many times can we watch Batman's parents die?
No, the odds.
How many times do the pearls have to hit the floor before we get it? Like, we get it.
What do you think
the odds? So move on and tell a different story.
I'm willing to bet you anything that they're going to have an entire section devoted to Frozen.
That would be lovely. That would be lovely, but I don't want it to be a rehashing of the Frozen animated feature. I mean, that's why I was thrilled with the way they added Frozen to Once Upon a Time, because they gave us different content. They gave us backstory. They gave us new characters.
Let me, here's the thing. You're going to kill me for this. Which one was Elsa and which one was Anna?
Elsa's the one with the snow powers in the blue dress. So Anna's the one with the pigtails
the reason why I asked is that I'm willing to bet you'll have Anna as a companion in the game.
That'd be cool. Although I think that would be a mistake. You should probably have Elsa as the companion because she's got all the cool ice powers.
But Elsa is the more mature of the two, and she'd probably be less interesting in terms of dialogue. You know, and she'd probably have to stay to run the country. Elsa's a little bit more liberated. You know, she doesn't have to. She's just, you know, second command.
You mean Anna?
She's the one who's the deadpan snarker who just, you know, has something to say about everything. And Hans would be just boring.
Well, yes, because he's the villain.
Kristoff would be boring to me.
No, but it's an opportunity to make Kristoff not boring.
Yeah, but then he'd have to bring along his moose, you know?
No, he wouldn't.
And I would not want to have Olaf wandering around. Although, you know, Olaf would probably come with Anna, now that I think about it. He'd probably be a tag along with Anna.
Well, it depends on where he's going, because he needs Elsa's snow powers to stay alive.
Well, didn't she... I guess. I mean, well, no. But the thing is, it would be taking place in that world, so it'd probably be winter anyway. So... Anna. Okay, you know what? We're just moving on. I mean, here's the thing is that I wonder if Kingdom... damn it. What? Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Oh, you're gonna hear this. Your Skype account has been chosen for random password verification for your safety. Please enter your password here and to verify you are this account's user or be locked. Yeah, right.
What? What are you talking about?
I got a message from quote-unquote Skype administration who's claiming that my Skype account has been chosen for random password verification for my safety. Please enter your password here to verify you are this account's user or not be locked. And I will note that accounts does not have an apostrophe and everything is capitalized. I mean, every first letter is capitalized. Right. Yeah.
Well, we're just going to move on with our show, folks.
I'm just going to save that for later. Anyway, but here's the other thing about Kingdom Hearts. I wonder if they're going to have Marvel characters in it now.
I don't know. We'll wait and see.
Yeah. So anyway, the question of the week was, what, if any, was your favorite part of Rock Band? And your answer was... What was your answer, actually? I know you said that you didn't like having to...
I like single-player mode.
Oh, okay. And mine was basically vocals and doing the tour, you know, the campaign. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. You enjoy feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, set us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. Actually, leave us some comments on this podcast, on this episode, because we didn't get anything last week. I don't know what happened. Sometimes it happens, no one writes in, you know. But that's our favorite part of the podcast is having people react. You know, otherwise it just sounds like we're just jerking off just talking and not having anybody listen, even though it's patently untrue. You know, the strange thing is that last week episode we had the most listeners we've ever had.
Huh.
So people are listening, but they're not talking back.
Hey guys, if you don't write in, the show dies.
Yeah, every time you don't write a comment, we kill a kitten. So. Okay, God kills a kitten.
Jonah kills a kitten.
Well, yeah, they're both one and the same. Anyway, thanks for listening in, and we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.